I'm Gary Thompson, and this is Randy Abrams, and this is the Malware Report. Randy, I've been reading a lot about the massive buildup of botnets as a result of the Stormworm. Is it possible that they are going to be used to launch a massive denial-of-service attack?
It's certainly possible. I don't think that's exactly how they're going to use their botnet. The Stormworm's a worm or a virus that fundamentally sets up an email system on each PC that it infects. So instead of me trying to send out 10 million spams from my computer, which I'd get shut down quickly, what the authors of the Stormworm have done is infected a bunch of PCs so that they can send out a ton of spam from hundreds of thousands, if not even millions, of PCs all around the world, which makes it very difficult to block the spam. Now, in turn, they're able to rent out those PCs. I mean, it could be your mother's PC. It could be your coworker's PC that's infected. And these people are making money off that PC because they've installed their software and turned it into what we call a drone or a zombie. Mm-hmm. Now, typically when there's a massive denial of service attack or distributed denial of service attack, as we call it, when there's a lot of PCs participating, there's a lot of focus on finding the infected PCs to stop them because they're actually interfering with a company's ability to be on the web. Well, these people are making a lot of money off of these infected PCs, and the last thing they want to do is lose them. And spam actually gets less attention in terms of finding the source than it gets on the gateway where people just try to block the spam. So while it's a possibility that they could launch a massive distributed denial of service attack, it would probably be cutting off their own heads.
Well, so they make their money based on, again, just based on spam? This is just a gigantic spam attack?
Yes, there's a couple ways they can do this. One of them is to send out spam, and the spammers are willing to pay for results. So if they can guarantee a certain number of messages are sent and the spam generators are not detected by anti-spam and anti-malware solutions, then they can rent these things out for up to $1 per infected PC per month. So if they have 200,000 infected PCs, they could easily be generating $200,000 a month in rental fees from spammers.
Wow. That's amazing.
A huge amount of money. Mm-hmm. So I can't see them wanting to cut off the cash cow by drawing more attention than they already have.
Right, yeah, no, that makes sense. Tell us again, if I want to check to see if my computer's infected by, or turned into a bot, what do I do? How do I prevent that?
Well, it can be very difficult because a lot of bots will use rootkit technology that hides them from security software. So scanning the machines with a high-quality antivirus product like Nod32 that has the anti-stealth features to detect the rootkits as well as the other malware is a must. You have to do that. However, once it's already infected, if the product isn't detecting it, then you need to do stuff like look at the network and what's coming out of your network, what's going to strange places. I mean, it's not uncommon for a network to be talking to Google or to MSN or places like that. But when you're going to unknown sites and a lot of data is going out to unknown sites, perhaps you've noticed a lot of SMTP traffic, email traffic, more than normal, then that tells you there's something out of the ordinary going on. Mm. And that's a way to augment your defenses and find infiltration.
Yeah.
I was going to mention there's another way that they make money with these bots, and that's with pump and dump schemes. That's where pump and dump, they call it.
What is that?
Pump and dump is where they'll identify a stock and they'll send out this message saying, this stock is only 25 cents a share right now. It's bound to hit $4 a share in the next 3 weeks.
That's
so
the pump,
what they're doing is they're pumping up this stock that they bought for pennies on the dollar because they know it's not going to be pennies, it's going to be dollars when they dump the stock.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not clear whether the Stormworm authors are actually the recipients of the proceeds from the pump and dump, or if they're just collecting money to spam out these pump and dump schemes. And we're seeing a lot of those. The spammers and scammers have switched tactics. So now instead of having an easy-to-parse email body where it says, you know, this stock's going to take off, they're sending it in PDFs. They're sending it in spreadsheets to avoid spam solutions.
But still, a lot of these are being caught with spam solutions. I mean, I know there's more and more people who are putting anti-spam solutions on their PCs. The ISPs are putting more at their gateway. I mean, essentially, even though there's a substantial amount that gets through, it seems like there's a lot more spam that's being stopped. And I read that there may be a slight change in how these people approach, spam as a result, and that's malicious web pages. Tell me about that.
Right. When they see their revenue or effectiveness declining because people are blocking the emails, detecting the attachments, or blocking the attachments, what they do is try to find another way to keep the business going and growing. So now what they're doing is actively searching for websites that aren't properly secured so they can infect legitimate websites. So then when the user goes to a website that they have every reason to expect to be safe, it turns out it's not, and it will exploit vulnerabilities that either haven't been patched yet or a lot of users haven't kept up with their patches. So they go there. The malicious software usually launches from a JavaScript, but it could be an ActiveX control, and it runs on their computer. And that's another way that they can get their bots onto the computers.
You shouldn't then, I mean, I get a pop-up periodically that says, you know, this requires ActiveX. Should I just stop using ActiveX?
I wouldn't necessarily say stop using ActiveX, but don't use it if you don't need it. And at times, you might not know whether or not you need it. You might not know if the web page is going to function properly. And there's two approaches to take then. One is say no anyway, because if you actually needed it, you can just refresh the web page and it'll prompt you again, and then you can install it. But the second thing to keep in mind is, do I need this? Does it matter to me if the web page works? More often than not, if it requires ActiveX or a script, what I'll do is say, you know, it's not worth it to me. There's nothing at this site that's so important that they have to run code on my computer.
Well, I think, and especially if you realize that there's a chance to get infected. I mean, I was talking to my wife the other night, and she was saying, I feel nervous about surfing the web at all anymore if there's now an opportunity that I can get on a legitimate site and have my computer infected.
It's somewhat dangerous out there nowadays, and I augment my antivirus sandbox technology that runs the browser in the sandbox, and it's not uncommon for me to see.
What does that mean?
Well, a sandbox is a type of program that isolates other programs from the rest of the operating system. Mm-hmm. So when I run the browser in the sandbox, what happens is if something malicious executes, it thinks it's running on my computer. It thinks it's running in Windows, which, I mean, technically it is, but it's not actually infecting the system. It's isolated to a fake system, if you will. And so no harm actually comes from it. When I finish browsing, I close the browser, I empty the sandbox, and it's all gone.
How does the average user get a sandbox? I mean, is this something you can buy? Or
I'm quite fond of a product called Sandbox IE.
Sandbox IE.
You would think it would just Sandbox Internet Explorer, but it also works for Firefox, and it actually can work for a variety of programs.
Mm-hmm.
The critical thing that a user has to realize if they're using a sandbox is if you've done banking, for example, your personal data, instead of being in the regular Internet Explorer cache or temporary files, is now in the sandbox's temporary files. If you run something malicious, while it can't read the normal temporary files, it can read the stuff in the sandbox. So it's essential that you frequently empty the sandbox.
Oh. Yeah, I would after every session, I'd probably be tempted to empty it.
Yeah, well, now you lose some of the customization where it knows who you are every time you go back to the same website, but I don't have that much trouble typing in my username and, if need be, password. it's a lot safer than leaving it there for any malicious software to get to.
Well, exactly. That seems like an obvious thing that, you know, having something refresh your username and password all the time is just sounds like you're asking for trouble.
Right. In fact, I ordered a magazine online and it came up for a renewal, and I went to renew the subscription. I typed in my name and it filled out all kinds of other information, and I actually told that company, I'll buy the magazine, but you need to remove my information from your database. When I go back to renew, I don't want to see that information pre-populated, because there's no reason for you to keep that information online.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would absolutely. I always get a little upset with either, you know, Windows or Google trying to fill in those boxes themselves, because I know it either resides with them, or sometimes it just resides in my computer. So if I lose my computer, I've got a real problem.
Yeah.
Well, if people are interested in more information on this topic, they can reach you at
askeset@eset.com.
Terrific. Well, thanks very much, Randy. This has been enlightening, and I think we need to be real careful out there. So this has been Gary Thompson and Randy Abrams for the Malware Report.